We're doing the laws of Shabbos, and we were up to the laws of cooking. We had finished last week the definition of what's called biblically cooking, and we discussed how that includes cooking, frying, roasting, baking. And now we go on to the rabbinics, which are a lot more applicable to us. We discussed a long introduction about how in ancient times they used to cook on coals. They'd burn their wood or other items into coals. And then they would use those coals, the heat from the coals, to bake and to cook. Now, in order to keep the fire going, they would commonly stir those coals. Stirring coals involves two biblical prohibitions. You are lighting the lower coals and putting out, extinguishing the upper coals, or vice versa, depending on how you're stirring, if you're putting them down, if you're putting them up. So that's a biblical prohibition, stirring coals on Shabbos. So the concern is, there are numerous concerns when we speak about cooking. Concern number one is you're going to stir the coals. Concern number two is you're going to stir the food in the pot on the fire, which is also facilitating cooking. It's not yet cooked, so you're partaking in the cooking process. That's another concern. Concern number three is that a person will seem like they're cooking on Shabbos. Meaning if you take a pot, even if it's food that's pre-cooked, and you put it on the fire on Shabbos, so it looks like you're cooking. You just put a pot on the fire. That certainly looks like cooking. And maybe we can understand concern number three in light of concern number four. Concern number four is something a bit unusual. Ordinarily, we say that Jews are not suspect of transgressing Shabbos. Our concerns in most areas of Shabbos, our concerns are that a person will err. They will forget it's Shabbos, or they will forget that this act is prohibited. There are a few exceptions. There are a few places where Jews have a hard time maintaining that this is Asur. One example of that is carrying on Shabbos. When we speak about carrying in public domain or carrying from private to public domain, there Jews have a harder time understanding that this is prohibited. What's called that hotzah is melacha geruah. The act of taking an item out of one domain into another domain is called a weak task. It's a weak melacha. People have a hard time wrapping their heads around it. I could carry within my house, I could carry as much as I want. Yet if I take it from my house out into public domain, suddenly I did a task on Shabbos. So people have a hard time, and so we have to be concerned that people will actually transgress that. And then we have another issue, and that is with regards to cooking, that historically Jews were suspect of dealing with fires on Shabbos, of cooking. It says that Jews would heat up the bathhouses on Shabbos. This is something which is extraordinary. We don't find this in other areas of Shabbos. When it comes to cooking, we do have to be concerned that someone might actually transgress Shabbos, because historically Jews had a weak spot for this. So that might help explain why we are so concerned that it shouldn't even seem like you're cooking on Shabbos. The Talmud says that people used to go to bathhouses on Shabbos. So, okay, they said you're not supposed to. They realized that they were paying the Jews who were running the bathhouses to turn on the fire and heat up the bathhouses on Shabbos. So they said, okay, no taking baths on Shabbos, but you could still go in there. They used to use it as a sauna. They used to sit there and enjoy the heat of the bathhouse without going into the bathhouse. They said, okay, if you're not bathing, you could just go in. They figured they're not going to turn on the fire just to enjoy the heat. No one's going to go into the bathhouse just for that. But what ended up happening is people would say, we're just going in to enjoy the heat, the leftover heat from Friday. And then behind the door, they'd pay the guy who was running the bathhouse and say, you heat up those waters, I'm taking a bath on Shabbos. So they saw it wouldn't stick. So they forbade going in to bathe, and they forbade bathing in hot water on Shabbos, and they forbade even going in to enjoy the sauna effect, to enjoy the heat of the bathhouse. But here we see that people were actually transgressing and burning fires on Shabbos, and Jews were paying other Jews to do this. So this is exceptional. We don't find this with regards to other prohibitions. So that's all introductory. Now we'll go into the technical laws, but this is all introduction. Yes?
Is there like an order for which is best to bless before you eat?
If you have no preference, yeah, ideally we say whatever you prefer eating first, eat first. But if you have no preference, if it's all the same to you, so then making a mizunot precedes making a shehako.
Shabbos goes to turn on, you know, do other things. You think, I mean, there may be other problems with that, but it seems it would be, you know, like somebody who wanted to fool themselves a little rather than just blatantly go out and do something that he knew was such an affair.
I don't know how many Shabbos goes they had in Israel. You're talking about the time of Rabbi Yehuda Hanasi.
Yeah, I guess.
I don't know. I don't know how many. Don't forget, if you could have a servant, that servant is obligated in Shabbos as well.
And it would be a Jewish servant. Even
a non-Jewish servant.
But I don't know the halacha. In other words, I would think to arrange that a non-Jewish servant would...
Non-Jewish servant is prohibited from transgressing Shabbos. Period. He's chayav in keeping Shabbos. A non-Jewish servant undergoes giyur within a year.
Yes.
He has a year. Otherwise, you have to sell him. A non-Jewish servant is as obligated as a woman. He has
here
the...
You're leading someone else to sin by doing big things.
Right?
You could avoid the
error. Is there a kule to having a Shabbos guy?
We'll get to a Shabbos guy. Down the road. We'll get there.
How does it work with hotels today?
That's an excellent question.
Because you pay a lot of people work on and it's kosher and it's okay.
We'll discuss it. We'll get there. We'll get there. Right now we're dealing with cooking. If you guys want to skip next... to dealing with Shabbos guys, we could skip around. Okay. So when it comes to cooking, we have a few rabbinic prohibitions. Sometimes the prohibition is so you shouldn't come to actually cook on Shabbos. Sometimes the prohibition is so it shouldn't seem like you're cooking on Shabbos. And sometimes the prohibition is because we're concerned that a person will deal with the fire. So one by one. Let's say on Friday afternoon, it's a hectic Friday afternoon, you want to put up food on the fire. In our day, you put it up on the plato or on the grate. You want to put food up on the fire for Shabbos. The food is not yet fully cooked, or it is fully cooked. This idea of placing food on the fire on Friday so that it will go into Shabbos is called shehiya. Shehiya. In computers, the term... lehashot in modern Hebrew is to put on standby. Okay? So shehiya is you're putting a pot on the fire, you're leaving it there on standby on the fire. Your intention is to eat it later tonight. Now, biblically, there's no problem. You put the food on the fire on Friday. You could put a raw chicken on the fire on Friday, and it cooks into Shabbos. You did nothing wrong, right? So there's no biblical problem here. The concern is rabbinic. The concern is that if it's not fully cooked and you intend to eat it tonight, then you might come to stir the coals. Okay, so that's our concern with shehiya. You'll come Friday night. You'll want to start the meal. You'll see your food is not yet fully cooked. You'll say, okay, I need a warmer fire. I need to heat up the flame. And so you'll come to stir the coals. Only after you stir the coals will you realize, hey, wait a second, it's Shabbos. But it's common practice to stir the coals. So our sages said, if you want to leave food from Friday going into Shabbos, you cannot leave food that is not fully cooked if you're going to eat it Friday night. So food that you want to eat Friday night has to be on the food that you're going to leave on the fire for Friday night has to be fully cooked. That's criterion or possibility number one.
Fully cooked
means that it's edible. Yeah. That's
sometimes for vegetables, like, does it depend on the some people like the vegetables less cooked, some people like them fully, completely cooked. It's almost like a mush.
I just want to see if he'll go into that or I should summarize that.
chicken, you can see it.
He's going to have a whole chapter on this. I'm not sure why he brought that up here. I don't understand what he's doing here. Give me 1 second, because he's...
Who's he? Who are you reading from?
I'm reading Kitzur Hilchot Shabbat Rav Posen. So the next chapter, he will actually deal with all the details here. So he's just mentioning this on the way, I guess. Okay, so let's skip forward to that chapter, and then we'll come back here, because once we start it, let's skip forward. So... one angle of permissiveness that's written in the Mishnah is what's called garuf v'katum. Okay, the Mishnah refers to it as garuf v'katum. Garuf is when they'd shovel out the coals. So if you shoveled out the coals, we don't have to be concerned. You're going to stir the coals on Shabbos. So you can leave something on the fire. If you've taken out the coals and it's just the heat of the oven, that's okay, because you're not going to come to stir those coals. The other way to do it is katum. If you put some earth on the flame, so then you've lowered the flame, and you show that you're not interested in dealing with those coals, so we're not concerned that you're going to come to deal with that fire on Shabbos. Another angle would be if you closed with tar, if you closed the opening of the oven, so then we're not concerned you're going to come to open that oven and play around with the coals. Okay, give me 1 second. Today we can't stir our coals, our fire... and our stovetops cannot be stirred. But as far as I know, all the rabbis agree that the definition of the prohibition is you may not do it, you may not leave food on an open flame. Even though technically you could argue our flame is not stirrable, there's nothing you can do. You'd stick a spoke into the flame, you didn't do anything. You didn't do a biblical prohibition, so what's the concern? The understanding of the rabbis of this century has been that you may not leave food on the fire unless you can cover that fire, okay? Or the food is fully cooked. So where is this relevant? Sometimes we have a blackout. A lot of people leave their food on a plata, on a hot plate, going into Shabbos. Then they have a blackout, so they don't have a plata. So then they say, hey, can I have hot water for Shabbos? So sure you can. Cook up that water and leave it. You could leave the hot water on an open flame if it's cooked. You heated up the water. Now you leave it on the fire. You don't. People sometimes say, I don't have a blech. In the United States, a lot of people do this every Shabbos. They take, they have a flat metal sheet, what's called a blech, and they place that over the flame. So that's the equivalent of having covered the flame with what we saw in the Talmudic times. They used to cover the flame with earth. So you're putting a metal sheet over the flame. So your flame is covered. But a lot of people in Israel don't own that. So then when there's a blackout, as we had last year and the year before, when you have blackouts on a Friday, suddenly going into Shabbos, people say, what am I supposed to do? I can cook. I have a gas range. But what am I supposed to do going into Shabbos? And the answer is, once the food is fully cooked, you can leave it on that open fire, right? So we said, if the food is fully cooked, I don't need to cover the fire. I might have an issue tomorrow morning. How can I place things on the fire? We'll get to that. That's a different question. But with regards to leaving things from Friday into Shabbos, heter number one is if the food is fully cooked or the water is fully cooked. Heter number two is if I can cover the flame. So then even if it's not fully cooked, I'm not concerned. You're going to deal with it. Okay, I'll get to you in 1 second. So, I get a phone call from a pillbox. A pillbox is one of those towers where soldiers sit on guard and they watch a large location all around them. and they're on guard duty up there. So they put up pillboxes all over, sometimes in the middle of the desert. But the soldiers in the pillbox have to make their own food. So a soldier calls me and he says, it's Friday. We have one little hot plate here in the pillbox. And from my experience, from questions of these guard posts, you can't bring things to a great heat with that little heat element. Usually, I know because sometimes soldiers call me and they say the soldiers before us were not observant and we're not sure they were so careful in kashrut. We want to kasher the pots here in the guard post, and then they try to bring the water to a boil and they cannot, meaning that the heat cannot bring the pot all the way to a boil. I had a soldier call me once, says 3 hours we're waiting here and the pot is not bubbling. The pot does not, so they don't get to the greatest heat in the world. But you could cook on it. If you put small amounts, you could still cook on it. If you fill up a big pot, you might not be able to bring it to a boil. So their question was, we want to make chulin for Shabbos. They have to make their own food there. So they brought them rice, they brought them beans, they brought them what they needed. Now, question number two, what do? How do we leave the food on going into Shabbos? So we're going to treat the heat, the hot plate, as a fire, because the hot plate heats up, the electricity in there heats it up, and that's what's cooking, so that's our fire. So if I can put a little bit of tinfoil over the hot plate, so I have a flame that's garufe katum, I have a flame that's been covered. But what I caution them is that if they don't have the chulin fully cooked going into Shabbos, they run into a different problem. A soldier comes off duty at 10 o'clock at night, or a soldier comes off duty at 12:30 or 2 o'clock at night. He wants to eat something, and then he wants to go to sleep. He has a problem if he's going to uncover the pot, take out some chulent, and he's going to say, it's not fully cooked yet, I don't want to eat that. He cannot put the lid back on. Putting the lid back on is facilitating cooking. Let's say he takes the pot off the fire, and then he discovers it's not fully cooked. He cannot put it back on the fire. That's cooking on Shabbos. That's the biblical prohibition of cooking, if it's not yet fully cooked. So even though we're discussing the rabbinical aspect of it, we always have to remember that if my food is not fully cooked, I have a biblical problem. I will not be able to deal with that food. He cannot take out the chulent because he's mixing the chulent by taking it out. He cannot put back the lid because he's facilitating cooking when he puts it back on. So if I'm going to deal with something that's not fully cooked, if I'm going to rely on that's permissible because my fire is covered, I have to bear in mind that does not permit my biblical prohibition of cooking on Shabbos. Just because the fire is covered does not mean that I could put food back on that fire. Okay? So that's something that people have to bear in mind, and sometimes people forget that. So today what we discussed is that to leave something on the fire from Friday going into Shabbos, we have a few angles to make it permitted. Either it's fully cooked, and we said when you have a blackout, that's a good kula to know. So if my items are fully cooked, I can leave them on the gas range. I could leave a fire on going into Shabbos, even though I do not have a blech, even though I do not have a way of covering it. Another way I could do it is by covering the flame. Kiragru favik tuma. What we will have to discuss, okay, we'll take another minute, is do we have to cover the knobs? Do we view the knobs that turn the flame up and down, do we view them as our capacity today to stir the flame? Remember, in Chazal's time, in the days of the Talmud, they would stir the coals with a spoke. Today, we don't have that. So before we continue, do you mind passing the cake to the new guys who just walked in? And the drinks, it's not... Okay, so in present days, if you want to raise your flame to make it a stronger flame under on your gas range, you turn a knob. Now I'm not up to date on every type of oven in the world, but to the best of my knowledge, for the last few decades, the way that range works is constant for ovens. It's very simple. You have attached to your knob is a long pipe, and that pipe has a hole opposite the meaning you have let's say you have the pipe where the gas comes in, a big central pipe, okay, where the gas comes in, and you have your pipe that's going to lead to the gas range on top. When you turn the knob, what you're technically doing is you're exposing more of the opening of that pipe to the central pipe that has gas in it. So you have a central pipe, and then you have, let's say, four fires. So each fire has your knob is actually attached to the whole pipe that runs back into that central pipe. And when you turn it, you're exposing more of the opening, so you have more gas coming into your pipe, which will ultimately come out on top and cause the fire to be greater. So the question is, when I turn that knob, what did I do? I exposed the greater hole, meaning I facilitated more gas coming in to my flame up on top. That's not stirring coals. Stirring coals is I'm taking a coal and I'm going to do something to it to cause it to give more fire. Turning the knob on a gas range is making it possible for more coals to come to my fire, for more fuel to come to my fire. That's totally different. So that's why Rabbi Feinstein says that turning the knob is the equivalent of bringing more wood to the fire. It's not like stirring coals. Stirring coals is I'm dealing with the fire itself, making it greater. Turning the knob on a gas range is the equivalent of going out, fetching more wood, putting it on the fire, because I'm adding more fuel. And being that our sages did not prohibit that, that's what Rabbi Feinstein says, that technically you do not have to cover the knobs. That was never prohibited. He says it's a good thing to cover the knobs, it's a nice thing to cover the knobs, but it's not part of the rabbinic obligation. It's a nice thing. If you can get a blech that covers the knobs, that's very nice. But you don't have to. Covering the knobs is not the same. Now, if you know that you might come to turning the knobs, you know, I have, Baruch Hashem, a bunch of mazikim in my house. They play with the knobs. So it's always a good idea to take off the knobs or cover them. It's a danger all week long if kids are going to touch the knobs. Or if a woman knows that she's apt to touch the knobs. I remember as a kid, I'd walk into a room, flick on the light switch. I didn't think about it, so it's a good idea to put tape over the light switch going in Shabbos. You don't have to, but it's the right thing to do. Maybe you do have to if you know you're going to do it, maybe you do have to if you know you're apt to do that. But if a person feels like, I'm not going to touch the knobs on Shabbos, I have my blech there, I know I'm not going to touch it. So then it's a nice thing, but it's not obligatory. Yes? Oh, so now you're asking a very interesting question. Being that when I turn off the knob on a flame, what I'm really doing is I'm just preventing more gas from coming to the flame, shouldn't there be room to turn off the flame on Shabbos, right? So the generally accepted understanding is that that's prohibited, but it's not so clear why it would be prohibited. You're right. You're right, because technically you're not turning off the flame. All you're doing is cutting off a supply. Look, it's a little bit more complex than that because just so we understand, if you have a wick, okay, you have a wick in oil, and your candle is lit, okay, so you have a wick in oil, and it's lit on Shabbos, you are prohibited from taking a straw into that oil and sucking out some of the oil. We consider it as though all the oil is a flame. And it's a machlokes among the Malei HaTosfos, whether the prohibition of taking out oil is because when you take out oil, the flame lowers a little bit, so that's considered like you lowered the flame a drop. Or, the way the Rush writes, it's considered as though it's all a part of the fire. So you see that there's a biblical prohibition to take out fuel sometimes, but that's where the wick is in the flame. The wick is there. You have the wick in the oil, and the flame is in the wick, so we consider it all one body. If you take out some of that oil, that's a biblical prohibition. Biblical. But over here, that fuel never reached the flame. When you turn the knob, you're stopping the fuel down there. So that's it's a big question. And it's not so clear what the prohibition is, but it's generally accepted that it's not permissible. But you're right. Your question is 100% right.
Also, under,
just 1 second. It's better to cover the knobs because you shouldn't. We don't play around with the flame.
If you switch off completely, then you extinguish.
You didn't extinguish. He's right. You did not extinguish a flame. You prevented more fuel from coming to the flame. You might have an issue of mukta. You might have other issues. But it's not so clear why it would be prohibited. You're 100% on the mark, yeah? Again, prohibited, yes, it's prohibited. Why it's prohibited, that's not so clear.
Another thing, I was thinking, economical-wise, if it's better to keep the gas on all the time or the bladder. I know you have time clocks also, that could be
So